Insights to Live By, the podcast, where we discover new pearls of wisdom to put into action and enrich the daily lives of others. If you are seeking a treat, you have come to the right place, because this is Insights to Live By. I am your host, Matt Zinman, and we have such an amazing special guest. I've become such an admirer of hers. I'm trying to nail down like what three words, because there's so many different adjectives to describe her, but she's so versatile. But I'm going to go with insightful, inspirational, and I know this is going to hit home, actionable. So we'll see what she says. But Rachel Druckenmiller, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Matt. I'm pretty stoked for our conversation.
I know, right? So we were having a nice chat just beforehand. Now, how did I do on those adjectives? I mean, did I miss? Do you have any others? You know, the thing about insightful, and I was reading on, you know, all the homework I do for, you know, wanting to get to know a guest before the show, and there was a common theme about you that I don't know, you know, has really sunk in, because you're you, right? You know everything about it. But the thing that I kept coming across is the insightfulness, the empathy that you really have, an amazing or even uncanny, somebody said, ability to connect very quickly with your audiences in ways that just immediately resonate. You mm-hmm. understand them at just such the highest level of empathy. And that's more than just an acquired skill. That's a natural you. So that's what other people are saying about you. So
word on the street.
Word on the street. Well, welcome, Rachel. And I do want to, I know we kind of jumped in there. I want to give you just a little bit more of a proper introduction for the very fact that you are CEO of Unmuted, which, I mean, as a branding standpoint, says it all. Also a national thought leader and change agent in the field of well-being and employee engagement. Recognized as the number one health promotion professional in the U.S., according to the official Wellness Council of America. Rachel, you support leaders and their teams, organizations, and associations to be more resilient and connected so that they can navigate the future with confidence, courage, and compassion. And I'm just going to throw in collaboration.
Yes.
For good measure. There's that fourth C.
Yes, alliteration.
So I know, right? It's memorable. That's the whole point. Yeah. So of all the things that you do, you know, you are a professional speaker and facilitator. Would you say that's really where you've landed right now?
Yeah.
And what I thought was really interesting is that you also, it says you are a certified virtual presenter. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're ahead of the curve.
Try to do what I can, you know? It's like, I heard someone say, either you panic, you pause, or you pivot. And I feel like I've done all three, but the one I've done the most of is pivot.
Right. And we only see that last, you are good on alliteration with that pivot. And so another thing is that you also had to start pivoting, both also in life and with your career. You had and are recovering from an unfortunate life incident. Mm-hmm. Can I just say what it is so that
go for it.
You were hit by a truck.
Yes.
Literally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is nothing to make fun of. And I know that you're still on the mend. So glad that you're doing okay and in forward direction with it. So
it's been very unexpected. I mean, it's like the whole year's been unexpected. So it's sort of like, I feel like we're at the point now where we should just expect things that we don't expect.
Right. I mean, it just seems to match right up with 2020.
Yeah.
Basically. You're very, very consistent. Let's kind of break away from that pattern. But one thing I saw you had written is, every time I face adversity, I see it as a catalyst and an invitation to live life more fully and intentionally. Mm-hmm. That's a great message. You're not just saying it, right? You're definitely walking the talk.
Living it out.
So how has that been going for you? I mean, you know, you can't get away from the fact that you are still in recovery, but what has this happened in May?
Happened May 3rd. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, aside from, you know, being on the mend, how have, and all the things that you have to do with COVID, and we'll talk about that too, just that event itself, how has that impacted you in ways that you've been able to turn into a positive?
Well, you know, it's interesting because leading up to the accident, I had been doing workshops for companies on resilience, you know, for the 6 weeks or so prior to that happening. And one of the things that I did and that I would advise other people to do is keep track of what I call bright spots. And so on a daily basis, I would make a list from 1 to 10 in my journal at the end of the day, and I would write down 10 bright spots from the day. So small wins, glimmers of hope, you know, it doesn't have to be anything significant, but it was something that in some way made my day a little bit better. And to be completely honest, there were a lot of days where I got to number 3 and I was sitting there really struggling to think and to convince myself that there were 7 more things that day that were okay and maybe even good that happened.
Right. Right. It's a little bit of a stretch.
It's a little bit of a stretch, but the interesting thing, one of my coaches, Delatora McNeil, told me the brain will expand to fill the space you give it. So if I told my brain, hey, brain, you're going to have 10 things that you're going to kind of keep track of during the day, because at the end of the day, you're going to be accountable for that. So what started to happen is that, you know, what we focus on expands. And so as a result of having that intention at the end of each day and that habit, I started to become more aware of when something good did happen. And I started, instead of just letting that kind of pass me by, like a lot of us do, right, I was able to sort of absorb it more.
So now are you folding gratitude into and throughout your day, or you're just kind of keeping track and you're blocking out time to really be at one with that? How do you do it on a practical level?
Well, for me, I mean, leading up to the accident, a lot of what I was doing, I was really focusing on it at the end of the day. It would be the last thing I would do before I go to bed, kind of write things down in my journal, have my list before I fell asleep. And so if your gratitude is the antidote to anxiety, so if you're feeling anxious before you go to bed, that can be a really helpful practice to put in place. And for me, it helps instead of thinking of the, I don't know, more traditional, what are you grateful for? For me, thinking of it in terms of what was a bright spot today? Because when it feels really, really dark, to think of and connect to something that was even a little bit of light, no matter how subdued or how small right. The light was, what was something that was a bright spot in the darkness? And so that really helps me just getting into that habit. And I'm, you know, more inclined. So sitting in the hospital, when I was in the hospital in the trauma room, I literally thought to myself, in addition to crying and being very upset and, you know, all the right. things you would normally feel, I remember sitting there thinking, all right, how am I going to use this? There's going to be something I'm going to talk about how you get back up when you feel like you got knocked down, when you're already knocked down because of COVID, right. And then you felt like you were just getting your bearings and you got knocked down again, literally, what's the message in that? And so I've come to learn that it's that we can choose to make meaning of things. We humans are meaning-making machines. And so I've learned through other experiences of adversity that I can sit there and wallow in that. And it is important to grieve it. There's a difference between grieving and wallowing.
Right.
So, you know, but I can move beyond that and say, okay, what's the meaning in this? How can I use this in some way for good?
Right. Yeah. And now I feel, and when you were talking about gratitude specifically, I'm feeling a little on the spot. Like I want to make that journal tonight. I want to be a bright spot in tonight's journal. So we're just going to raise my game here. You know, you also in seeing some of your speaking, you talk about COVID, you talk about what people are going through, and to not look past the reality of it, mm-hmm. and you know, what they need to do about that. Would you like just to kind of jump into that a little bit? And
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's been most helpful is, well, one, I know people are sort of sick of hearing about it. So just like, all right, yeah, this is the reality and it's annoying. And if I hear about it one more time, I'm gonna lose it. So I know people are at that point for sure.
Right.
And to acknowledge that this has been very traumatic. I mean, this has been a global collective trauma. I mean, it's traumatic to shut down everything and to not see your friends and to suddenly have everything about your environment change and to wear masks to the grocery store. This has been such a tremendous disruption. And we don't even know the long-term impact of this. This is going to be years to come that there's going to be an impact. And so what I found from the very beginning of this process was particularly important, especially as somebody who's known as a positive and optimistic, you know, person, sure, was to acknowledge the continuum of emotion that people are feeling. Instead of saying, here's a happy quote, you know, have a good day, that is really tone deaf. And so what I learned from the get-go was the importance of acknowledging to people, hey, this is really hard. If you're feeling scattered and overwhelmed and you're crying for seemingly no reason at all, and you're distracted and you can't focus, and there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. And you're not the only one feeling those things. That's what happens when something like this happens. So that permission, I think a lot of people really need and continue to need. They needed it then, they need it now, and they need it going forward. Permission to give themselves that opportunity to feel whatever they're feeling in that moment, instead of trying to escape it or suppress it. Because if we do that long enough, and I do that too, you know, I talk about this stuff because I struggle with it, so I can speak to it authentically.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, in terms of just general self-awareness, I mean, that's on a continuum. You know, do you even reflect on that and recognize why you're feeling the way that you're feeling, or, you know, right in line with your focus on being or becoming unmuted, even within themselves, you know, to themselves, in terms of that connection. I'd love to hear more about Unmuted. How did you come up with that? And, mm-hmm, and just, you know, the epicenter of what you speak to.
Well, for me, I came up with it because I started writing it in journal. I'm a journaler, you know? And so I was looking back in journals. I'm like, where did I first start writing about this? I started writing about it in 2015. Just in my journals, I didn't put anywhere else. And I recognized that I had been somebody who felt very muted in a lot of areas of my life in terms of how I showed up physically. You know, I wore uniforms for 12 years and never wore bright, bold colors or prints or anything. I, you know, dealt with my parents were going through a difficult period of their marriage when I was, you know, 5-6 years old. Didn't share any of my feelings about that because I was the good girl who held it all together. So I muted my emotions. I muted my external expression. I loved singing, but I would not sing publicly. I would sing by myself in a room with the doors closed until I was about really 20, 21 years old in college after coming back from a semester in Spain. And, you know, or I experienced rejection and pain from my peers, and I would cry alone in my room or write in my, I even have journals from elementary school. So I have proof of this. I feel like, oh, I should maybe get rid of them, but I do have evidence of things, how I felt when I was 10, because I wrote it down. And I look back at that and I think, man, I did not feel alive because I was literally muting all of these areas of my life. And over a period of the past 15 years, to be fair, this has not been an overnight process. Over the period of the past 15 years, I have little by little incrementally gotten to a place where I feel fully alive, and it's reflected in how I show up physically. It's reflected in how I show up energetically. It's reflected in the aspects of myself that I share, whether it's my writing or my emotions or my voice or seeing a therapist or telling people how I think or feel about something. And so for me, the freedom I experience in that is something that I know other people deeply desire but don't know how to access. And so part of what I feel like I'm here on earth to do is to help facilitate that process for people.
Right. And it's so freeing as you describe it. As I'm hearing, I'm like, wow, maybe I'm thinking to myself, maybe there's, you know, more that I want to bring out and reveal. But I think that people are freed, not only for themselves, but of being judged. Mm-hmm. And whether that's just in a, you know, in the shift that we're in and holding it together and not wanting to reveal true feelings to other people or fully express yourself in general or in a work environment and with, mm-hmm, colleagues, what are your thoughts on, I mean, your expertise to a large degree is of course across the board with personal development, mm-hmm, but you speak a lot to companies and leaders and also to their teams about being unmuted themselves. Mm-hmm. How do you see that applying, especially, you know, particularly now with everyone virtual?
Well, I see a lot of it as one of the things I talk to a lot to teams about is the importance of checking in on people versus, you know, checking on them, like just checking in, how you doing, you know, that we need more of that since we're not having those incidental water cooler conversations. We're not seeing somebody in the bathroom in the hallway. And so we have to be that much more intentional about really checking in with people and say, hey, you know, wanted to check in and see how you're doing. How can I best support you right now? These conversations are not necessarily happening. Or that a manager, if somebody has been kind of, you know, ghosting them essentially, you know, they're not responding to things, that there's a tendency to maybe get upset with that person, like, oh gosh, they're really dropping the ball. Maybe there's something there, maybe they have three kids they're trying to homeschool and their mother-in-law lives with them and their husband lost their job. You have no idea
right. What
someone's going through. And so one of the things I try to bring, you mentioned at the start of the conversation, empathy. One of the things I really try to bring into the conversations I have with people is this awareness that I invite them into this awareness that everybody is carrying around invisible backpacks. You cannot see them. And so this is why it's so important for us to give people the benefit of the doubt and to get first, to get curious instead of judgmental. So that curiosity of, you know, asking that question of, you know, how can I best support you? Is there anything that you don't have access to that would help you better do your job or navigate this time? How can we best support you? If companies didn't do anything else but ask that question and acted on it,
right,
we'd be better off.
Right. And then it's also on the other side of the question of the person being honest and being okay giving the answer. So if you think of just general culture, oh, this is my home life, this is my work life. And Now so many of us are, to a large degree, one and the same. And dealing with any number of more, you know, personal challenges, mm-hmm. like the examples that you just gave. And yet from a boss management standpoint, it's like, oh, I really can't dig in, you know, probe in anybody's personal life. That's their personal life. Where's the line? Mm-hmm. You know, and in terms of appropriateness, to be able to show that compassion and connect, and for an employee to feel like it's okay to talk about some of those things for, you know, I know it comes down to the individual relationship, but What are your thoughts there?
So I think part of it is with leadership, starting with vulnerability of saying, hey, this is really hard. Or, you know, I know some companies that, you know, their leader might do a video once a week where they're sharing something where it's like either Cribs edition, you know, like MTV Cribs, or they're showing some aspect of who they are as a human, kind of that, you know, what I often refer to as the soul behind the role. They're doing something to show somebody some aspect of themselves that is human, or even acknowledging at the start of a conversation to say, hey, this has been a particularly, you know, challenging week. And here's an area without, you know, opening Pandora's box, here's an area where I've been struggling. You know, it's hard to not pay attention to the news, or I'm finding myself having trouble sleeping. Leaders can really be the model for this by sharing their own vulnerability, what has been difficult for them. And there's a fear for leaders that, oh, if I do that, people will think I'm incompetent, can't cut it, I'm going to drop the ball. So it's a well-held vulnerability. It's not like my marriage is crumbling. I mean, that's not appropriate right there. So,
right. There's the one. You found it.
Yeah. Like that's not appropriate. It's really thinking through, you know, what do people need from me right now so that they can have permission to be honest about what they are? Because frankly, when people are in fear mode, when we're reactive, when we're anxious, when we're worried, we can't access, like, the parts of our brain that are responsible for creative problem solving shut down. And so we can choose to pretend that there's this professional self and this personal self, but if the personal self is in this constant state of alert and alarm and fear and anxiety and worry, and the parts of their brain that are needed to do this job aren't working because we don't think that's something we can talk about, there's going to be an issue in their work product. And then we're going to have to address it in a way that's maybe not the most effective because we're not going to get to the root of what's going on.
Right.
So, you know, I think promoting mental health resources, what do you have access to? I think even having conversations, I've had, you know, a couple employers have reached out to me and said, candidly, one of the challenges on our employee engagement survey is that people are really struggling with rest. That metric, the metric of rest, of feeling like they can take time off and really get away and disconnect, has gone down since our last survey. And so I facilitated a conversation that was 2 hours with a group of 30 people. This was a 2,000 person company, a group of 30 representative people. And we had conversations and kind of did a design thinking session virtually with people coming up with solutions for how to set better boundaries for things that could be done at the corporate level, at the policy level, to really allow for and to create a more supportive conversation around rest and around what people needed.
Right.
And so part of it is you have organizations forget that their people have so much insight and wisdom that if they only asked generative questions and created the safe space for those conversations to happen, they could solve a lot of their own challenges themselves.
Do you think that HR's role has changed on both sides of the equation here, where, you know, it's not just processing and compliance and all the things? I know you have a lot of experience on the HR side, mm-hmm. and you're dealing with HR people a lot for what you do with facilitating and all of the above. But what about their role in terms of reaching out and bridging that divide? Or on the flip side, for the employee, that maybe it's more okay for them to express, I need more flexibility because my kids are home, or, you know, something that is hard to communicate. What do you think of that?
Well, I've had lots of conversations with HR professionals and different, you know, associations and groups. And one of the things that I find is really helpful is to create community. So if you are part of a SHRM chapter where you're located, or another type of group like that, that you would intentionally take time to be a part of that community, because oftentimes what I find to be helpful is, you know, bringing a group of people. If we're doing a session, let's say there's 60 people, right, that are on a Zoom conversation, and we break out people into groups of or four people and get them to share, hey, what's something that's really worked for you? What's something that has perhaps been a source of meaning or purpose for you in the past 6 months? When you get people talking about meaning or purpose, it's something that helps pull us out of that state of despair, because it reminds us that, yeah, this sucks. And wow, I'm really feeling more needed and valued than ever before, because people are recognizing finally that the people element of the business needs way more attention than it's previously received. And so I think one thing that's really important to recognize here is that I think HR is more prone to burnout than ever before, because they have even more on them. And also with,
right.
you know, what's going on with racial injustice in this country too. Now they suddenly, it's like, oh, by the way, and fix all the DEI stuff as well, and burnout and flexibility and work from home and technology. So I think right. more than ever, we really need to be mindful of is HR, are the people supporters supported enough within the organization? Do they have, because they're probably not going to speak up. They're going to be the ones that carry the responsibility, feel the need to fix everything, and they're going to let themselves suffer in that process. So I think we need to be that much more conscious. If you are a leader and you have an HR team at your organization, or even an HR team of one, that you would be more mindful to reach out and say, hey, how are you doing really? Do you have what you need? How can we better support you right now?
Right. That's true. I mean, I hadn't really thought of it that way. I mean, they do have such a big load on them, and they have to carry it. It's almost part of their professional role not to complain, that they need that permission to be unmuted, mm-hmm. You know, very appropriate to say in this case. And I would imagine that there are a lot of leaders who are, as much as they need to show that compassion and empathy, it's not natural for them to easily cross that line. No matter how much you coach them, they still have to, you know, that's just out of that comfort zone. And so the HR role can really step in there, but they have to be well supported even to do that in the first place. So I'm yeah. really glad you brought that up. I mean, HR people get a bad rap.
They do. Yeah.
And at the same time, you know, you can't, you know, blanket, you know, for whatever reasons that may be. And on the other side, they're underappreciated mm-hmm. and they also need greater support right now. So I certainly hadn't planned on going down, you know, that tangent, but it's very relevant
yeah.
for anyone, you know, in the new normal, as it were. What would be, you know, we're going to shift gears in a minute just a bit, but what would be the, you know, several actions that you think a leader and or an someone on a team side or employee should be doing right now if they're not? Is that too broad of a question, or
you know? Okay, I can run with that.
Yeah.
So one is, I think for leaders to acknowledge, to look up so Gallup has done a lot of research in this space about, you know, what people need from leaders in times of uncertainty and crisis. And there's four things that they found that people need. They need trust, compassion, stability, and hope. Trust, compassion, stability, and hope. So for a leader to understand and recognize, hey, nowhere in that list was all the answers and doing everything perfectly. So right. I think for leaders that this pressure we put on ourselves, and I've done a lot with leadership teams, you know, with executive leaders, you know, CEOs and VPs and directors that are like, well, I've got to be the one. It's like, well, how do you better support each other? So part of it is creating community within, you know, these different levels of the organization, so that if you are at the C-suite level, what kind of conversations are you having as a group together that is really checking in on each other and saying, hey, any resources that would support us? Because if that team is not cohesive and that team doesn't feel supported, it's going to trickle down and be a mess in the rest of the organization.
Right.
So I think for leaders to understand that, hey, you know what people need from you? They need trust. And one of the ways that we build trust is by asking for feedback and by being open and honest and having that vulnerability. So when we ask for one of the top ways to build trust is to ask for and act on feedback that people give. But most leaders will not necessarily place themselves in that humbling position of asking for feedback, much less acting on it. So first, you know, I say building trust. Compassion is saying, hey, I get this is hard for me too. I've got two kids at home and I'm about to lose my mind also. And then, you know, really helping to create any kind of stability. So what can you have that's a standing, whether it's a standing meeting or it's a video message that gets delivered consistently, or it's some type of a social experience where you bring people together and have that opportunity on a, you know, weekly or biweekly basis. And then, you know, really building hope of saying, hey, here's where we're heading, and even letting them be part of shaping that future of asking. I found this to be really cool, bringing groups of people together and saying, hey, how might we be particularly innovative or creative or collaborative in the midst of what's going on right now, that we might look forward, you know, or we might look back a year from now and say, wow, we handled that time so well. Just ask those. I mean, we're not asking enough questions. We're not getting curious enough, and we're not tapping into the collective wisdom that already exists in the people that work with and for us.
Right. You know, that cohesiveness is so key. And then at an individual level, you know, what you think is, or taking that action might be viewed as a weakness, is actually something that you can embrace and recognize. It's a strength that you know, following through on that will be received as a strength, even though you perceive that doing it would be perceived almost opposite.
Yes.
Great point. What about for the employees, anybody in the work environment, and, you know, knowing that they need, but feeling they need to speak up? How do you think, what is your advice for that?
Yeah, I'd say, so a couple things for that come to mind. One is, I often tell people to, one, don't hesitate, initiate. So when you have something that you're like, oh my gosh, this has really been frustrating me, I don't know what to do with this, I feel so stuck. Instead of staying in that feedback loop of I'm so stuck and I'm a victim, who is somebody that you could reach out to who might be able to help you? Reach out to that person. Like that, we have that hesitation of that judgment. What are they going to think of me? You just got to let that, it's a choice. You got to choose to let that go. It's going to be hard and uncomfortable, but to take that initiative and reach out and ask for help, because chances are, if someone that you work with that you know cares for you even a tiny bit, knew that you were struggling and that it was impeding your ability to do your work, to get sleep, to be present for your kids, to serve your clients and customers, if they knew that there was something that they could do to help you in a way that would address all of those things, they would probably be upset if you didn't come to them. So part of that is just dropping this perception. We're so afraid to ask for help because of the perception of what other people are going to think of us. And I remember when I got hit by that truck, there was a woman who reached out to me the day after it happened. Her name is Lynn Argenbright. She's amazing. And she said, hey, I want to set up a meal train for you and your husband. And my first reaction, Matt, was like, ugh, but I mean, we can figure it out. We're fine. I have all the reasons why we could figure it out. I didn't need her to help. And I was like, someone just offered to set up meals for you for a month. You're in a back brace. You just have a fracture in your spine. How about you go say yes to that, Rachel, and you stop making excuses? And I did. And oh my gosh, can I tell you, it was one of the best things I did, because we were tired and my husband was tired too. And he didn't have the energy at the end of the day to make food after taking care of me all day. And thank goodness I've learned to receive help from people and not view it as a sign of like a character defect. In fact, it's a character strength to be someone who recognizes your own limitations, that you would allow other people to fill in the gaps for you.
Right. What an amazing person to do that.
Oh my gosh. She is. And then she gave me a bracelet. She's like, oh, these My Intent bracelets. She's like, what word do you want? I said, I want the word overcomer. So she got me a bracelet has the word overcomer on it. I mean, she's beyond. She's amazing.
It's almost like learning how to take a compliment on yes. another scale. And you know, somebody who's going to make an offer like that, they're not making that, you know, and I hope she says no. They're offering it because they want to feel good about following through, because yes. that's why they're offering. So you know, it sounds counterintuitive, but it's not like you're doing them a favor, but you're letting them follow through on doing you one so that they can have the reward of why they're offering in the first place. So I'm glad you said yes.
Yes. And people are looking for purpose. You know what I mean? Like right now when we're going through crisis, people are desperate to connect to purpose. And one of the fundamental ways that anybody listening to this conversation can connect to a sense of purpose is by doing something kind for somebody else. We all have control over that.
Right. It's a great point. Certainly kindness is you know, at the heart of, you know, we share that in common. Mm-hmm. You've been so generous in sharing so much. It's just you know, very, very rich. You've obviously been doing quite a lot of speaking. I was curious to ask you, with the pivot that you've done with COVID, and of course, in making the adjustment with you know, your recovery, how many speaking engagements? Like, what's been the experience of going from the live events to being a certified virtual presenter, and how has your career adapted in you know, the new normal?
Well, I mean, I remember, like a lot of people, you know, when the middle of March happened, or the week of St. Patrick's Day, where everything just imploded, you know, I had my moments of kind of panic and pausing then, because I started to get all these, you know, emails from people saying, hey, we're moving this back, we're canceling this event, we're postponing right. this. And I just watched my entire year just fall apart. I mean, stuff are booked into November. This was happening in March. And I remember thinking, you know, as a first year business owner, I'd only been in business for myself at that point for, you know, 7 months. And I'm like, what am I going to do? And then a client that I had not worked with in 3 years reached out to me on LinkedIn, and they said, hey, I did a burnout training for them 3 years ago. They reached out and they said, hey, our people are really struggling. We want to support their emotional and mental health. Do you do virtual trainings? And I tell you, all it took was that one question. And I said, like any good entrepreneur, I said, I sure do.
Right. Nice going.
I was like, let's talk about it. What do you want to do? And so we mapped it out. And we mapped out, so it's going to be 3 sessions, and resetting your mindset and refilling your cup and restoring connection. And those are the 3 things I mapped out. And we walked through it and, you know, did it virtually with breakout rooms. And I was relatively new to doing that at that point, but I'm committed to figuring out the best ways of doing things and upskilling myself as well, so that I can show up and really deliver at a high level. And that was the catalyst. That message was the catalyst that made me realize, all right, here's the thing that I do. And then I started doing some free webinars, and then different HR associations that I've spoken at in the past started reaching out and said, hey, we need to totally upend our program for next month. With 2 weeks notice, can you do something on building resilience?
They're scrambling. They're scrambling to fill, you know, your on stage calendar, obviously getting wiped out. And yet the organizations and companies, they're just as stuck. So how's it worked out for you?
It's been great. I mean, I did a little math maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. So I was like, how many of these things have I done? Because it's been a lot, whether it's a keynote or a workshop or a leadership training. And I counted, and as of 3 weeks ago, and I've done a few since then. So I'd say I've done at this point about 72 or 73 virtual experiences, trainings, workshops, keynotes, whatever, since the middle of March. And it's the second week of September.
And that's more than you could possibly have done physically.
Oh, for sure. Because sometimes, I mean, there were days I had 3 events in one day, which I couldn't, you just can't do that. So I've been able to, it's been so cool because that virtual model allows for greater access for people that maybe couldn't have flown somewhere before, didn't have means to travel, but really want to be a part of an experience. And so I've gotten to connect with and meet people I would have never connected with had all this not happened. So sort of seeing the silver lining and feeling very, very purposeful in the work that I'm doing right now. It's been very, very life-giving.
Right. And you know, the one question from the opportunity, it's like, and you make the entrepreneurial pivot, are you now mentoring other paid speakers about doing what it is, you know, how you've done it? Because they're all scrambling just the same.
They are. I mean, not yet. I did have a company reach out to me today, you know, because a lot of my work is, I mean, I love those, just being on stage and creating that stuff as opposed to, you know, much coaching right now. But a company reached out and they said, hey, we got to deliver this kind of dry content. And we want to make it not be terrible. Can you teach us how to make dry content not be terrible? And I said, yeah. So I'm going to, you know, work with them and guide them through a process of how to have a more experiential session, even if it is kind of more technical content, and kind of give them a framework for how to do that. So, you know, that's been a really fun thing to go through and to learn how to do. And you know, just
not just on the, on the technical side, but the audience experience. Uh-huh. What's your impression of, obviously it's very different from being in a crowded room, uh-huh, to managing it virtually, but it's the outcome that matters. What's been your impression? I mean, I know you're a little biased here. Of course, my audiences love me just as much, but right. I mean, what from the dynamic standpoint, yeah, what are your thoughts on whether that's changed or how you or they have had to adapt?
I mean, so part of it depends on the industry. I mean, I've done a lot. I often get brought in to work in very technical, introverted industries. So places where people come to me and they're like, look, they're probably not going to talk, so we'll see how this goes. And I'm like, all right, I like a challenge. You know, and part of it is creating the space where, you know, I always start with music. I always have music playing when people come in. So it feels like, oh, I want you to be here, you know, that I was expecting you. And I find that people who ordinarily would be uncomfortable sharing or speaking out if they were in a large room together, just because they can chat it in, are more inclined actually to participate because they feel like there's a little bit of a, almost like a shield between them and if they want to share. So I find that you're able to move people in and out of conversations much more easily. Like if you have people break out into small groups, you have a room of 100 people and you have them break into groups of 4 people, it's like herding cats to try to bring them back together.
Sure.
But in Zoom, it's like you just shut the room down. They all are forced to come back at the same time. So it kind of makes those kind of experiences easier and more efficient. And because of, you know, virtual collaboration tools, there's so many different things out there. I mean, Mural is one of them, Padlet. I mean, there's so many different tools you can use that allow you to capture insight all at once, lots of insight all at one time, in a way that people weren't doing before, that you'd have to go back and, you know, transfer all the written sticky notes into a, you know, document that's typed up afterwards. You can, right, get all of that stuff to happen in real time and let other people see each other's ideas and thoughts. And so it actually, I find virtual experiences can make learning and ideation and innovation and collaboration more efficient than it would have been the way that a lot of people were doing this kind of stuff before.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing here. It's interesting, you know, how in this case, you're forced to do it. Mm-hmm. Everyone's forced to do it. And the irony, if you want to call it that, is that it works out to a degree for the better in terms of the facilitation and just leveraging the technology in that way. So that's just very cool. You know, I want to transition just a bit here. I could talk to you all day, as you could probably gather, but we're going to show you the screen here because I want to just, before we talk about some of the insights to live by that you have to share, I'd like to get just a little bit more insight about you. And we have the wheel of insights here about Rachel Druckenmiller and Druckenmiller.
You got it.
Okay. See, I have a man brain trying to do two things at once. You can see it doesn't quite work. All right. So there's 12 questions on here and we're going to spin, and I'm sure you're fully capable of handling any one of these.
Yeah.
Let's see where it leads us. You know, it's funny. I did put this on. And the other thing, Rachel, is once questions are asked of any guest, no other guest gets to answer the same question. The questions are always unique on the wheel. So this landed on favorite song. So as a singer, you have a lot to choose from. You probably know this answer.
Gosh, a favorite song. I feel like it's like picking a favorite child. I have a lot of songs that I really love. My absolute favorite song. Part of me is like, it depends on what I'm focused on. I there's a what song.
Do you want to go group? You want to go?
Yeah,
we musician? Can. Is that easier?
I'm like Spotify. I'm like checking out my.
In terms of who you listen to.
Who am I listening to? Yeah, I mean, I've been listening to a lot of upbeat kind of music, like, you know, Here Comes the Sun and Keep Your Head Up and I'm Still Standing.
Okay.
Little right. Elton John, but I do love, I'd say a song that I've been singing a lot that I think is a good kind of reminder for us right now is I've been singing this Little Light of Mine in a lot of places, because I think it's a good reminder for us connected to the bright spots, but also to remember that no matter what is going on around us, we have the choice with how we show up. Like, we can choose to shine. And I don't mean that in a very trite way. I mean, I really do mean that we have the choice with the type of energy. Emotions are contagious. What type of emotions are you bringing into an environment, whether it's virtual or in person? We have control over that. And I think we forget that. And so, for me to think about every time I'm with a group of people or talking in a conversation, I'm really mindful and intentional of letting the hope and the joy in me kind of shine out, because it is contagious. I mean, emotions are absolutely contagious. And so for me, I'd say the song of 2020 for me has been that, like, no matter what tries to put that light out and be like, nope, you can keep trying to put it. I can get hit by a truck. You can upend my entire business. You can, you know, but I'm going to choose to shine anyway.
I like it. I'm not as good with this. Even the question's on the wheel. I don't know that song. If I heard it, I'd know it. I'm not going to put you on the spot or anything, but
if you'd like me to, do you want me to hear it?
What would be the first line? Just like, you know, if it's a name that tune moment, you don't have to break out in song, but how does it go? Just,
oh, this Little Light of Mine. Okay. We'll do that. All right, here we go. You ready? Okay.
Seriously, I'm not trying to, like, you know.
Oh, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. You need to know it. You need to
I just need to know it. What?
Yeah, yeah. Okay,
how's
ready?
How's it go? It's all, okay. Yeah.
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Got it. I love it. You got a certain great style about you with that too. I'm like, oh, it's unique, like patented. So now it's funny. That will be a first. I don't think I'll have many guests to break out in this song. Now you do this at conferences too. Like,
I do. I sing. That's, I started awesome. Doing it. There's a group called Heroic Gang, and I went through their training program about 2 years ago. And one of the things that came up was sharing my story of how I found my voice in gospel choir. And I started, I at the very last minute asked my writing coach, I'm like, should I put that in there? Would that be weird if I sang on stage? Because we've all seen that go terribly wrong if you've been at a conference and it was really kitschy and awkward and people are cringing. I did not want to be a cringeworthy person. And they're like, oh, you should totally do that. And then I started doing it. So about a year and a half ago, I started singing on stage. Is kind of terrified doing it, but I now it's part of what I do from behind my computer screen, and I see people singing along. Sometimes our kids are singing along, you know, Disney song. It's so fun. It makes me come alive, you know.
So you always want to be a professional singer, then you turn out to be an inspirational speaker, and it's all up to you. You could just you know, layer that singing career.
Yeah.
Right, and I love it. That's great.
It's going to happen. There will be an album. Matt, I haven't told anybody else this yet, but I'll tell you that my aspirations are that there will be something recorded in the next year. I have some people that have recording studios, some people that are also musicians that are local to me in Baltimore. And I'm like, you know what? We've been talking about this for a while. Let's maybe try to record some stuff.
That'd be awesome. Well, now you've let me in on it, and then you have to let me in on it when it happens. I'd love to know that. Thank you. Now we actually do the wheel three times, so we're going back to the screen.
Oh, okay.
And favorite song is now eliminated from the wheel, and we are going to Love Most at Home. So we are all naturally spending more time at home, and you're talking about gratitude earlier, and here's that moment, aligning gratitude with your home. What do you love most about your home?
Well, so I cannot keep plants alive outdoors, but I can keep plants alive indoors. And we have like 6 or 7 plants in my living room that are thriving. And I love just sitting in my living room with the bay window with all of my plants there. It makes me feel like I'm in a very alive space, even though I'm inside. So I love that space in my house.
That's wonderful. Yeah. I almost wish I could ask that question of everybody. Right.
That's like, especially now, because you're like, hey, you're home all the time.
Especially now. Maybe I'll have to change the rule on certain questions, which will make that a VIP.
There you go.
So cool. Thank you. I don't have a green thumb. I can promise you that. Although my wife, Erica, is amazing. All right. So one more time. Let's see what we've got. Insights about Rachel. Oh, I just threw this on here today. And it's the first, but it says COVID adjustment. I didn't even know what I meant by this, but I guess we're just going to go with interpret it as you will. Maybe aside from your profession, let's go personal. What would be the biggest adjustment you've made during COVID?
This is sort of embarrassing to say, but I'll say it anyway.
Okay.
Also because of my injury, I have never watched so much television in my life. And the three favorite shows that we have binge watched, I know that was a question. So I'm sort of doing a blended answer here.
Yeah.
Schitt's Creek, quite possibly one of the funniest shows ever made ever. Finally got watched the entire series of Parks and Recreation. And probably, I think we finished rewatching The Office for like the third time. So I found that, and I had a lot of time where I couldn't really do a whole lot. And so I had a lot of literally idle time. And instead of guilt tripping myself for doing that, I sort of like, you know what, you've done a good job and you've pivoted. And if you want to watch a couple hours of funny TV, go do you. So that has been a COVID adjustment. I have watched more television in the past 6 months than I have in the past like 2 years.
Well, you know, you have to ask yourself, well, what do you do now with all the extra time that you're not spending on planes and airports and going to all these conferences, right? Now you get that time back. You're doing more speaking now than you were.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
I am.
So of course you've deserved it.
Yeah. Treat yourself, right?
Now we're officially going to keep the binge watch question on the wheel, but thank you. Those were wonderful insights about you. And in spirit of the show, and I know things come up throughout the conversations, this doesn't have to be related specifically to what you do. It can just be life in general, life lessons. You can do 1, 2, or 3 insights to live by. Okay. And if you're doing 3, which I imagine you have probably 3.
I'll probably do.
Save the most notable one for last. Like grand finale insight.
Yeah. All right. Well, so one thing comes to mind for me to start off, and that is that when you label yourself, you limit yourself. So, you know, one of my labels growing up was, right, oh, I'm shy, or I'm timid, or I don't do that. I'm not somebody who sings in front of people. I'm not someone, it's all the things that you finish the statement, I'm not someone who with, that end up holding you back. And now I'm like, well, you can decide to be the opposite of that at any moment. And so for me, I've made more intentional choices to not let the labels that I carried with me for so much of my life continue to define me.
That's wonderful. And, you know, I know this was a pre-show thing, but what you're saying now kind of reminds me of your mentioning, if someone says, well, I'm a rambler, mm-hmm. right? Oh, I'm rambling.
Yeah.
That really aligns with unmuted. You don't want to label yourself because people need to hear what you need to say and you're making an assumption.
Yes. Yes. Like, I hear that all the time. I'm rambling. Yeah. It's like, you deserve to be heard. Stop apologizing, you know?
Right. People just have that tendency sometimes, and it's like, it's a habit.
Yeah.
And so
I've said it before for sure.
I mean, yeah. So I try and break a number of people of that habit. It's like, you know what? I'll ask you for an apology if I feel I need one. You don't have to apologize to me. It's okay. Everything's fine. So is there anything more about labeling that you want to cover, or you can jump into the next one?
You know, I think with that in general, there's a book I'm reading right now by Benjamin Hardy called Personality is Impermanent. And one of the things that I think is particularly helpful to consider is, you know, even when we take different assessments, like people take Myers-Briggs growing up, right? And I was like, I'm an introvert in high school. Like, I literally was, I'm an introvert. And then it wasn't until maybe a year ago, I was talking to a friend of mine who's known me for almost 20 years. And I told her about that. I was like, I'm having this identity crisis because I feel like I'm getting feedback that I'm very extroverted. And she said, maybe you just never felt safe enough to be yourself.
Nice.
I was like,
that's a wise person.
She's very wise. She's my friend Tori. She knows me well, and she can speak truth in ways that are sometimes hard to hear.
Yes, she sounds like a very good friend. And what would be your next one?
I'd say my next one would be, a friend sent this to me when I burned out 3 years ago, and I love it and have not forgotten it. It's, you've been assigned this mountain to show others it can be moved. So when we think of any way, anytime we're dealing with an adversity of some sort, anytime we're dealing with something that is painful or difficult, that we could choose, say, I wish this wasn't happening to me. I wish this wasn't happening to you. Woe is me, victim, victim, you know, in those kind of situations. Or we can, you know, look at that and say, maybe I went through that so that I can help other people who are going to go through something similar in the future, and I can help them heal more quickly. I can help them feel less alone. I can help them feel validated. I can interject at a point where it would have been really helpful if someone had done that for me, so they don't have to go so far down that path as I did and experience the same degree of pain. So I find that when we find that, you know, that we've been assigned this mountain to show others it can be moved, it helps us make meaning of the difficult things we go through in our lives.
Yes. And it seems to be, I had to think about it when you said it, because you know, in terms of interpretation, it is one of those things that it's almost after the fact of having to get through something. But if only we could have that attitude going into the front end of the mountain before we move it. Is that possible? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, I think part of it is a matter of like retraining the brain. So when you can do meaning making exercises, like even on a daily basis, if you sat down and thought about for 2 minutes, thought about something that happened and think about, okay, you know, why did that happen? What could I learn from that? Even if you don't know why it happened, what's something I could learn from this? And that's why when I was sitting in the hospital room, I've now done this so many times, it's become kind of habitual for me. That's why even when I was in the trauma room, I was thinking to myself, how am I going to use this? There's a story here. This did not happen to me just to frustrate me. This happened for me so that I could use it somehow.
Right. What good can come of it?
Yeah.
You know, something bad happens. How do you leverage some level of, you know, if it's not during it, after it, optimism in order to try and make up for the cruddiness of it by bringing out the good, right? Yeah. What you said earlier about, you know, coming out on the other side of something. I think we talk about that quite a bit, and it is a decision to a large degree, but easier said than done.
Agreed. It's hard to have that perspective in the moment.
In the moment. It is. After. I'm trying to think, when was the last time I had a mountain in front of me I was happy about? So now, again, it's hard to choose. You've been through all kinds of things. You're, you know, again, I look forward to anybody continuing to get to know you better. I definitely encourage people to look you up and see some of your speaking online. And that's why I could talk to you all day, because it's well beyond the time that we have. But you really are incredibly insightful. And so what would you say would be that finale type insight to live by? It doesn't have to stand apart, but you saved it. So what would this be?
The zinger. I would say it's sort of a two-parter, but it's connected. It's do not despise these small beginnings and allow the unfolding. So accept that, you know what, everything that ultimately ends up great and amazing and remarkable started as something small. And we often lose sight, like the caterpillar, the butterfly started as a caterpillar, a lowly little caterpillar, like crawling around the ground, and it becomes this beautiful creature with wings and colors and spots and this magnificent, but when it's the caterpillar, we don't see that. And so I think for us to remind ourselves when we're trying to, speaking as someone who has a strong sense of urgency to kind of rush things through in my life, anything of significance that's ever happened in my life started as something small, and it was something that I allowed to unfold. It was not something that I forced and pushed and hustled my way into. So that's what I would leave people with is thinking through, you know what, everyone starts somewhere, embrace the small beginnings and be open to the possibility of what they're going to lead you to.
Right. And if you despise is a strong word. I mean, if you really, you know, in the moment, then that's not exactly going to encourage you to get to where you ultimately want to get to go also. So that's really well said. I'm always curious to see, like, what is she going to say? You know, that's really a good one. Well, I want to also ask you to let people know where to find you, anything that's next for you, what you'd like to share. But before you do, you have to go to the wheel one more time.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah.
Now there's one different part of this is that if a question comes up you don't want to answer, you can pass it to me.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
I've never had anyone do that though. Okay, so this has landed on most inspiring leader. So you are an inspiring leader. Some people might answer this question, Rachel Druckenmiller. Now, what do you say is the person as a leader who has inspired you?
I say the person whose leadership has really inspired me the most, who activated my interest in personal development, who I saw model compassion and empathy and a presence that was contagious and captivating, all these things that I didn't even realize I was probably internalizing little by little, is someone everyone's familiar with. But I'm endlessly just captivated is the best word by her. And I started watching her show when I was in middle school, and Oprah Winfrey, like I just am really, she's probably one of the first leaders I really remember watching and following and thinking like, she's something special. You know, she just has a way about her that just sucks people in, and she does such meaningful and important work in the world and has opened up conversations. Talk about getting unmuted. If you look back, I mean, there's quite a few, you know, different documentaries and things you can watch about her life, but just some of the things that she's done to bring about conversations to things that people just weren't talking about in the 90s, and to shed light on those and to give people a voice that didn't feel heard. I mean, the very beginnings of that kind of stuff that's commonplace now, she was doing that at a time where nobody else was doing that. She was willing to be brave and courageous and put herself on the line. And I think that, and to be vulnerable and to be human. And I just think we can learn a lot from that example.
That's amazing. I mean, and you also had a bit of a buildup in answering the question. These are people, some people know. And I'm like, okay, who is it? I want to know. You went Oprah. And what a great answer. And I feel like we don't see her very much anymore. And I'm like, why? Why is she depriving us of?
Super Soul Sunday. Depends on where you look. You know, for her. And then like Next Generation, Brené Brown. I mean, Brené Brown's books really gave me the permission to be vulnerable and to not be so, you know, mired in shame I was feeling, and to not feel because I'm being perfect. You know, so the two of them have done a tremendous amount to inspire the way that I do what I do and the types of things I talk about. I would say I've been heavily influenced by those two women.
I will tell you, I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, she's going to say Brené Brown. That's really legitimately what I was thinking. It's not an after the fact moment, but I've also heard you quote her or refer to studies that she's done. I'm like, well, everyone knows probably Brené Brown. So with that, please share anything you'd like to. Where can people find you? What's next for you?
Well, they can find me at unmutedlife.com. And if they go there, they can download a resilience toolkit with a journaling prompt and a reading list and all sorts of things to help reinforce some of what we talked about today. That's one place to go. And then I'm also very, very active on LinkedIn. So I sing on there. I do videos a couple times a week and share other content. So LinkedIn's a great place. I'm also on Instagram at unmutedlife. And then if you're a Facebooker, it's Unmuted LLC. And then I would give you my Twitter handle, but I go on Twitter once a year. So.
Right. Yeah. I'm still in remedial on Twitter, to say the least. It's like, oh, just give up. Once a year sounds about right. Yeah. Well, that's terrific. And you have an album coming out sometime soon.
Oh, sometime
depending on definition of soon.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I texted my friend Leroy 2 days ago. I was like, Leroy, you want to get together on that songwriting thing or like recording music? And he's like, absolutely. So, I mean, I sent the text and I sent it 2 days ago. So
it's great. You're on record now. You're on record. You've literally put it out there.
Got to make it happen.
I look forward to that as well.
Thanks.
Rachel, thank you so much for being our guest. It's just so enriching, and I'm so pleased to meet you personally and wish you all the best. I hope we stay in touch.
Thanks, Matt. Great conversation. I really, really enjoyed our time together.
Thanks. Hope you enjoyed this episode of Insights to Live By. Be sure to connect with me on Instagram and Twitter at Matthew Zinman and join our community at insightstoliveby.com. Wishing you and yours an enriching day, and we'll see you next time.